Offside presents a World Cup group preview with Andrew Gunling and JJ DeVan.
Oh, yes! Caught offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gunling and JJ DeVan. What's up, brother?
Oh, it's building. It's building to a crescendo, Andrew. Group F, can you believe it?
I know. Look at us just working our way through the alphabet.
Are you getting to the point where you're like,
play the games, please?
Please, yeah.
Yeah.
Like next week when we have the, you know, obviously we'll cover England. I'll be very excited about that too. But really, I'm getting to the point where I need to see a ball being kicked.
I'm excited about this group that we're about to do here for a multitude of reasons. Germany, Mexico, South Korea, and Sweden. And most of those reasons pertain, well, obviously there's the Mexican factor here. And for that, we're actually going to speak with a guest on this podcast, Tom Marshall, who covers the Mexican national team for ESPN FC, who's on his way over to all that going on over there in that part of the world. He's going to join us. I believe he's actually at JFK now, getting ready to fly out to Denmark, where the Mexican team will be taking part in a friendly against the Danes. So that'll be fun to talk with him. But a lot of the reason that this group is so interesting isn't necessarily because of the guys that are there, but some of the guys that are not. And we've talked about Sweden with Zlatan. And I'll tell you what, let's use that as an entryway right into our first team here and Germany. And their song, by the way, number one currently on the German Billboard chart.
Oh.
It's called One Night Stand by Capital Bra. Bra.
Is this my one night stand? Is this my one night stand? No, 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 no. Моя любимая, такая дивная, красивая, я. Справедливая, непобедимая, ты моя, я, baby, ты моя, я. Ты моя любимая.
Yeah, it's number one on the German Billboard charts.
I'll tell you
something. If you've got a problem with it, you can take it up with them.
Yeah.
Or just the messenger.
It's a far cry from David Hasselhoff and I've been searching for freedom. Put it that way. That's bad.
But
that's up there with the baddest of the bad that we've had so far.
The Hoff?
No, the Hoff is...
Oh, this one. You
at least the Hoff.
Capital Bra.
Yeah, Capital Bra, bra.
Yeah. But I'll go back to what I was saying there. And look, there's so many reasons to love Germany heading into this tournament. Obviously, they're the defending world champions. Look at their roster. They're just loaded. But look, there's been several players so far in this tournament where you saw, huh, that guy's not on the team. Interesting. This was the first one where you had to give it the old...
What?
When I saw Leroy Sané was omitted from the German squad, I don't know, maybe it's my English Premier League sensibilities.
No.
Or maybe it's just common sense. I don't know, but I was stunned. Like, actually had to, like, saw the headline and had to click on it immediately because I was just shocked by it.
It bowled me over, and it bowled me over in a way where I think as a football fan and as a football watcher and broadcaster and podcaster, I've become a little less inclined to go with the knee-jerk reaction. You know, where you're like, oh, this is ridiculous. It goes against everything I've ever known.
And really? Because that's kind of what our industry is.
Yeah. I've started to read much more about other people's opinions and then try and come to a middle ground myself or whatever. I couldn't help but the knee-jerk reaction on Sané that this doesn't make sense and I am resistant to anybody who tries to rationalize this one for me. And I still have not really accepted this decision by Yogi Löw.
Well, let's go through it. And look, I don't need to run through all the qualifications of Leroy Sané, PFA Young Player of the Year this year, this past season for Manchester City. You know, we know what he brings. Incredible speed. He's a good goal scorer. We don't need to sit here and educate you on Leroy Sané. You all know his quality. So I guess instead it makes maybe a little bit more sense to look at the reasons why he is not here instead of talking about all the good things about him. What is it that he's lacking, perhaps, that would cause a manager that is so highly thought of and so well respected? This it can't just have been some like on the whim decision from Yogi Löw to exclude him. There has to be some thought and logic that went into this.
Yeah, but what I've heard from people hasn't really convinced me entirely. So the first article I read was Rafa Honigstein's article.
Same.
Who is like the go-to guy for German football.
Yeah.
And he spoke about how Yogi Love feels that there is cover in the wide positions.
Do you want me to read what he wrote? Because I have a portion of it here that was most interesting.
Yeah, but he's basically saying it wasn't just tactical, it was also social.
Here's a part of Rafa Honigstein's article at ESPN FC. Starts here, quote, "Leroy is a great talent," Lowe said, but he continued. "He had not made his mark in previous games for the national team. The German word he used was angekommen, or arrived, implying that Sané had failed to connect on and off the pitch in a meaningful way with his teammates. There was another clue when Lowe mentioned that Leverkusen's Julian Brandt, the fourth wide player at whose expense Sané was dropped, had gone to the Confederations Cup. Sané had not, by contrast, opting instead to have a surgery on his nose last summer. That decision had not gone down well with the German FA hierarchy at the time. Lowe and team manager Oliver Bierhoff felt that the player would have done better to use the chance to stake his claim for the World Cup squad."
So, to use English football man parlance, he didn't buy in. It's not so much a tactical reason, it's more that Lowe is looking at it and being a veteran of so many campaigns, and he said, you can't have Billy Big Bollocks wandering around thinking he is the man. That's what he means by social. He hasn't fit into the fabric, to the culture of the team, to the team spirit, to the team ethic. And so he feels it's a risk to bring him at this point in his development, and he's decided to go with someone in Brandt who is more to his liking in terms of the social aspect of the squad. I'm not sure I buy it.
Right. I mean, look, that's kind of where I'm at with this. I will, in some cases, I'm happy to second guess a manager. But again, this guy is just so accomplished, and he seems so rational that I kind of want to just fall in line with him because I tend to trust him. So if he views Draxler and Brandt to be of a similar level to Sané, which again, I don't know that I agree with that, but I have to assume that he knows more about this than me. Mm. So if he views them as being players of a similar level, then I would say that I am then comfortable with him viewing Sané's lack of participation at the Confederations Cup as some sort of a tiebreaker.
No.
Or if Sané's not bonded with the rest of the team like Brandt and Draxler might be, again, that can be a tiebreaker between guys who you view as being on a similar plane. So if that's how he viewed it, again, I just happen to view Sané in a higher regard as a player. But if he doesn't, then I guess I can see where he's coming from.
Now, Martin Lawrence in The Guardian laid out his stats comparative to those who are going to be on the plane. So he said, Brandt scored a respectable 9 goals in the Bundesliga, but registered just 3 assists. Marco Reus scored 7 goals in 11 appearances for Borussia Dortmund, but did not pick up a single assist. And Julian Draxler had a direct hand in just 9 league goals at PSG, where he was in and out of the team. In addition, Sané's average of 3.2 successful dribbles per 90 minutes was substantially more than Draxler at 2.4, Brandt at 1.7, and Reus at 1.3. And his ability to get in behind opposing defenders is something Germany may miss. And that is my feeling. But Martin Lawrence goes on to point out that in this German side, picking the pass between the lines is more important than one-on-one dribbling. I still don't buy that either. And when we get to the section where we could say what could be their undoing, I will posit a scenario for you.
Okay.
But I'm not saying that Yogi Lowe is wrong. I'm just saying the weight of evidence for me would always be to bring him. You're under no obligation to start him, but I'm just thinking in a tight game coming off the bench, that kind of explosive skill is deadly. When legs are tired, when the game is stretched, what could he do? That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm with you. And again, it's why I was shocked when I saw it. I don't know. I guess only time will tell if it turns out to have been the wrong decision. And I don't know that what happens, we'll ever be able to know one way or another if his absence will have made a difference.
Well, he says, I mean, Love is acting like it's a natural progression in the cycle of a player, which he could probably claim with all his experience he's seen before, because he's talking like, we'll see him in September. We'll see him in September for the Europa League Nations Cup tournament, whatever the hell it's called,
yeah.
And everything's going to be fine.
It's just weird. It's a weird balance to try to determine somebody's club form versus their national team form. I mean, you have to believe, like you said, Yogi Love is going off of Leroy Sané's performances with Germany, and they have not really been all that special.
Yeah.
So I guess he's just holding that in a higher regard. That's more important to him than what he saw from Sané at Manchester City.
Imagine if he chipped in that hammering they gave Mexico at the Confederations Cup. Imagine if he'd been there, he'd put off surgery, and he got himself a few goals. We may be having a different conversation.
You wonder if that is a decision that Sané will live to regret. Now, look, he's still so young. He's going to play for Germany in a World
Cup. Yeah, but I think people, at the, you know, careers are short, Andrew. And he's young enough to rebound and be at other tournaments, but this is going to sting.
Yeah. Well, let's go to what you were saying there in terms of what could be Germany's undoing. Because we look at them, and like I said at the top, we know how great they are, defending champions. They a lot of people's favorites. But yeah. If it doesn't go that way, what do you envision being an Achilles heel here?
I'm putting this out there, and I don't want people to fly off the handle, but we'll say Thomas Müller, 8 goals this season in the Bundesliga. All right, not spectacular, solid enough, I guess. Mesut Ozil, injured for parts of the Arsenal season, hardly an outstanding season for them, although had a lot of assists for them, as he always tends to do. I'm just saying, in a game where something different is required, neither of those have got burning pace, neither of those are necessarily dribble specialists. Ozil is very comfortable on the ball, as is Müller, but they're not that kind of player. And I'm just thinking that this squad, as solid as it is, and it is very, very solid, if you look at the German team on paper right now, like, how many of those players would you rank in the top 10 in the world? Like, in the top 10 in the world. I'm not sure there's a whole ton of them, like, individually. And I know it's about the collective with Germany, and it always has been, and that's one thing that they've never lost in their many stages of development. But I just envisaging a game where they need something a little bit different. And I know Timo Werner offers something different up front, but somebody who can really take on players, tack the space in behind defenders and unlock a game. And I'm wondering, just wondering, if this squad is a little bit short of something. And that something could be the Manchester City winger they're leaving behind.
I'll tell you what, man. You look what I wrote here. I totally agree. I mean, this is a different, like, they're still great. They're still among the favorites. But this is a little bit of a different Germany than what we're used to. Podolski, Schweinsteiger, Lahm, Klose, that era is now over. I mean, those guys are gone. I like Timo Werner, but like you kind of were saying with Thomas Müller, you know, Werner had 13 goals this season for Leipzig. Fine. But you're right. If we're talking about Germany, you're talking about top 10, 15, 20 players in the world. You're not talking about him. Mario Gomez is on the site. He scored 9 goals this season for Wolfsburg and Stuttgart. The other great teams that we're talking about in the same breath as Germany, are they scared of these guys? Thomas Müller, he can play, like, he played in the lone striker position when they lost 2-0 to France in the semifinal at the European Championship. Is that where he's best suited to play? Is that where Germany will play him here? I wouldn't think so. Remember, it was Miroslav Klose, as old as he was, who actually started the final against Germany in 2014. I mean, they were still looking to him as a goal scorer. So those guys are gone. This is a little bit of a different Germany. Now, you talk about top 10 players. I look at Toni Kroos and I say, he's class.
Yeah, I'm being harsh here, but, you know,
But you're right. You're right. It's a different Germany, and this may be a tournament where we find out if these guys are as great as maybe they've been touted. X factor.
Timo Werner, if there's going to be one. 13 goals, 8 assists last season. He's dynamic. He runs the channels. He's direct. And he looked apart in his games at the Confederations Cup. I like him, Andrew, and this could be his time. I think he offers something different. And if you put the right pieces around him and in behind him, you know, for example, he'd really love the kind of play Ozil could give him when Ozil is in full form. And I think he could score goals in this group. So I think he's the X factor. I mean, when I was preparing this last week, I was ready to put down Sané, but there we go.
Yep. Cross that off the list. I have two. One of them I'll just give quickly, and that's Manuel Neuer, just because, I mean, he's going to be German's goalkeeper, but we haven't seen him really in so long.
Well, we've seen very nice slow motion training clips of him back looking absolutely fabulous in training.
All right.
But, I mean, if I, personally, Ter Stegen would be starting for me.
Wow.
It's such a long injury layoff for a goalkeeper in such a specific position. I wouldn't be taking any chances. Ter Stegen is a more than able deputy to Manuel Neuer.
And a keeper who prides himself in the athletic part of being a goalkeeper. Quick off the line, quick reflexes. And then my other one, the bigger one for me, is another name that you mentioned, and that's Mesut Ozil. Because you just don't know what you're getting when you get Mesut Ozil. Now, by and large, he is a great player.
Yeah.
But ask an Arsenal fan what they think of him right now. I don't know. And here's an interesting thing to me that I was reading. German national team assistant coach Thomas Schneider was quoted as saying this about Ozil. We expect him to challenge himself in training. Mesut is always having treatment. It didn't seem like a very glowing remark. They want him to push himself, and he's basically saying he's not here. He's not even available here to do it. So, I don't know.
It's not great. You're hoping something was lost in translation there.
It feels like the microscope is kind of on him a little bit heading into this tournament. Because like you say, we mentioned those names that are gone, so he will now be looked upon. He's a veteran of this team. He'll be looked upon as a guy to lead, not just off the field, but certainly on it. So, you know, and look, since making his – I don't want to talk down about him too much because you do forget that he's good. Since he debuted with Arsenal in 2013 – he's created 476 scoring chances and has 50 assists. That's more than any other player in the tournament, according to Opta.
I think he had something close to 18 assists last season, even though he only had four.
In a bad year, right?
He only had four goals himself, I think, or something like that. So that
he is still a playmaker, and you forget that.
Absolutely.
About.
That's why I referenced him in terms of what he could do for someone like a Werner running in, running into the channels, creating chances in behind. Look, they are strong. There's no question. They know how to win. They know how to be dour when they have to be. They know how to close out games. I guess when you talk about teams like Germany, Brazil, Spain, you know they're good, so you're kind of looking for little pieces or little kind of weaknesses in their armor. So if we're sounding negative and you're a German and you're very upset, don't be.
Yeah. And by the way, because I mentioned this for Nigeria, I feel like I'm obligated to mention it for Germany also. They have also instituted the no-sex ban. Along with that, they have also banned alcohol and social media, which I think is a good idea. No word on whether or not they've banned butt sniffing. And for those not aware, Google it.
Good Lord. Yeah, the sex ban is back again, Andrew. Yeah. Like I said, you know, you can still have a good time and get your 8 hours in. That's I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I've heard that. One other thing before we leave Germany, whose team is this now? Like this, you know, we would have said before, this is Schweinsteiger's team. This is Philipp Lahm's team. This is
Matt Hummels, Manuel Neuer, the veterans there. If you look at the incredibly fast-tracked career of Joshua Kimmich, you could say it's Kimmich's team now as well.
Not ahead of Neuer, Kroos, or Hummels.
I don't know, man. Look at the responsibility he's taken on. He might be the face of Bayern Munich as well. Seriously.
Wow.
Yeah. He is an incredibly mature young man who has just... Why are you smiling at me? I hate calling men young men. It's weird. Like he's.
Why?
I'll tell you. He's assumed. Do you not remember when Lamb burst onto the scene and he just played like a veteran? Mm-hmm. You know, he had that kind of. It's definitely a Germanic thing. They have this kind of
maturity.
Maturity, yeah, and a seriousness about the way they go about their business. Yeah.
So there you go. That is Germany. So I guess we leave one team that has instituted a sex ban and we head to another that has no intention whatsoever of instituting such a policy. Mexico! And we come into Mexico. The number one song in the Mexican Billboard charts is Tiempo by Banda Los Recoditos. Tiempo pa que entiendas que lo nuestro es algo verdadero. Déjame abrazarte, quítame este miedo. Me lastima ver cómo te estoy. Ah, CONCACAF's finest. The Mexican national team. Look, I feel it was a little bit of a low blow what I did there going in talking about the sex ban. But
you're obsessed. Your mind is in the gutter.
I'm not obsessed.
You are the tabloid podcaster of football podcasts.
I'm not obsessed, but look, I think me saying this is probably just a reflection of what has probably been the biggest talking point in Mexico among the fans over the past couple of days. Yes.
Yeah.
You don't think so?
I'm completely numbed to all these things, Andrew. Pre-tournament shenanigans. I grew up in the era of pre-1996 European Championships, Paul Gascoigne.
I know, but
and those guys, the dentist chair, all that stuff.
Well, here's the...
If there's not some kind of shenanigans before a tournament, I don't want to hear about
How
it.
How are you sitting right now?
Just,
who are you, Sharon Stone?
I'm just stretching my leg, you weirdo. You've got sexual stuff on the brain.
You're right.
What is wrong with you?
I don't know.
Honestly.
But for those who don't know, there's a story that the Mexican team, there was a party that was held on an off day that one report had in upwards of 30 prostitutes in attendance at this party.
Yeah.
Now, some elements of this have been disputed. We'll ask Tom Marshall about this because some people are saying that these reports are coming from tabloid-esque publications.
Let me tell you, I know that from my weekend in Mexico City, they have a fairly feral and robust tabloid newspaper section, which I'm not surprised by this. I would give the guys the benefit of the doubt. I've been on Mexico Twitter too as well, and there's a lot of women who are saying that the women that were shown leaving the party, let's just say there's been a misogynistic undertone to the reporting of this.
And I hope that's true.
And we don't know who they are.
You're absolutely right. And I hope what you're saying is true. The only thing I'll say about the benefit of the doubt, 2010, there was an incident. 2011, before Copa America, there was an incident where eight players were sent home. So
you're so puritanical about this issue anyway, it doesn't shock me.
No. I'm not judging anybody, but I'm saying on the eve of...
You have a quick file that you can access of all sexual misconduct in football.
If it's not a big deal, why is Hector Herrera suddenly not training?
I'm not saying it's not a big deal, but I'm just saying I want to give players the benefit of the doubt.
We'll ask Tom Marshall about this. Let's get into some of the more important elements of this. Watching, maybe I shouldn't have been surprised by this, but watching some of Mexico and Scotland the other night, you tell me if I'm being too strong. They are so done with this manager, Juan Carlos Osorio.
And have been for some time.
Yeah. But boos ringing out at the mention of his name. Chants. Osorio out. I mean, I'm trying to wrap my head around where that comes from, because I don't think they play a dull style. I think that they've, by and large, done about as well as what you would think. You know, they qualified with relative ease in CONCACAF.
Yeah.
I don't know if people thought they would perform better at the Confederations Cup. I don't know if people thought that. I guess maybe the 7-0 is just still, emblazoned in fans' minds, but I can't quite put my finger on what it is about this man that they detest so much.
Ever since I moved to the United States and became in regular contact with Mexican national team fans, even the most moderate of them has expectations, Andrew, that are just way beyond anything. They remind me of they are the England of CONCACAF in terms of what they expect versus what they actually can field in any given, tournament. That's the only place I can think that it stems from. They've got this almost West Ham past that they look to, where they were unbelievable when they never really were. And they take it out on their managers. It was noticeable at the friendly versus Ireland last year, when they, gave Ireland a good beating, let's be honest. The joy, the absolute joy. And talking to some fans afterwards, we expect this every game. I mean, we should be beating everyone. We consider ourselves a top 10 nation in football. They genuinely do. And wherever this comes from, it distills into this lack of patience with the manager. Mm-hmm. And I do think that they loved previous managers much more than they...
Miguel Herrera.
Well, yeah, yeah. So...
Well, yeah. Well, this is it. I mean, Osorio's going to coach him through this tournament, and then that'll be that. Who knows? He could be the next manager of the U.S.
Yeah, and there's been some high-profile wallopings as well in tournaments that matter. Well, every tournament matters to the Mexican public. That's as far as I can see.
Is good.
We could host a caught-offside tournament tomorrow morning and invite them, and they would expect to win it, because that is just the mentality, and it would be as big as any competition they've been in, which is a good mentality, makes for passionate fans. but I don't think it makes for rational fans.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this. I actually happen to really like this team. I think that this is a good Mexican side with players who have kind of been around the national team program for a while now. Up front, between Chicharito, Lozano, Vela, I think that's a pretty strong attack unit that they're going to be throwing out here. Look, here's the issue for them. And we're talking about fans' expectations. Okay, what's a reasonable expectation? If fans want to say, get out of the group, fine. I'm all on board with that. You're probably not going to win the group because it's going to be Germany. And so what happens? If you finish second in this group...
You get Brazil.
You get Brazil, most likely. And so what is... You're not better than Brazil. And I think even the most reasonable Mexican fan can see that. So what needs to happen for a Mexican fan to leave this tournament feeling good about what they did?
A very good performance against Germany, and they beat the other two teams, right? And they go into what we'd expect to be a showdown with Brazil, and give Brazil the full of it for 90 minutes. I think that's the only way they come out of this with the... the absolute dreamland would be that they would top this group, which is not impossible. Not impossible.
You're right.
But... unlikely.
If you can get a draw against Brazil or against Germany, suddenly
win your other two games, which is eminently possible.
Yeah.
You don't know.
I mean, look, Costa Rica topped a group 4 years ago that included England, Italy, and Uruguay.
Right.
So, crazy things can happen.
It's tournament football. It can absolutely happen.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about it now on the Mexican national team. We haven't done this yet in all of our group previews. This is our first guest to parachute in and give us the lowdown.
We have to, because it's El Tri, and we must bow to the fact that they are the biggest national team in this country that are competing in the World Cup.
They are our daddy at the moment.
Well, don't say it like that.
That's what they are. And to talk more about a guy we've had on before, we love speaking with him about all things Mexican soccer, and that is Tom Marshall of ESPN FC back on the show. Tom, what's up, man? How are you?
Yeah, all good. Just looking forward to, obviously, the World Cup, and I'm actually heading over to Copenhagen, and then last game, and then obviously over to Moscow, so just excited, really.
Well, you are excited, and as I do find that very sweet. As an American fan, I'm trying to not be jealous of you. So, but you know what? I'm going to bring you down, and let's get the ugly business out of the way early. This story following the Scotland match last week, the reports of members of the team partying with upwards of 30 prostitutes. What's the latest word on this? And B, can you confirm whether or not JJ Devaney was in attendance at said party?
I can't confirm or deny anything.
Good man, Tom.
No, I mean, we got to be careful with it. I think that's the first thing to say. I mean, TV Norte is the publication that basically is very much tabloid, very like paparazzi. Basically, it was paparazzi. It was somebody outside a house that the players had rented. And obviously, they're only going to have a couple of days off before the World Cup. So obviously, they wanted to kind of relax, but. Obviously, the allegations were that they invited girls there who weren't necessarily the wives or partners. And then, that's had a knock-on effect. I mean, Hector Herrera, he didn't train today. And there's rumours that he's left camp to go to, to go and see basically his family and sort things out. Because, there's multiple journalists close to the Mexico camp right now that are saying that, obviously... this story's caused friction, and it really is not what you want ahead of the World Cup. So I think on one end, the players got a day off, and the federation said they had a day off; they can do what they want. We're not saying that was the right thing to do or not, but at the end of the day, it's a negative. There's no other way of kind of steering past that fact. It's not good publicity. It's not good press, and it's brought a kind of stain on the. I mean, on the image of this Mexican national team, but like you boys were just saying, it's America's team. I mean, this is the most popular team in the States at this World Cup.
Yeah, not to belabor it, and we will move on to more soccer-related things, but I'm just curious. In 2011, they had a similar issue before the Copa America, and 8 players were dropped. This time around, like you said, there won't be any punishment. Is that just simply Copa America isn't taken quite as seriously, so they could afford to make a statement there, and a World Cup, they're just not willing to do that?
Possibly, but I think what happened at the Copa America was they were in camp. So it was like they broke the hotel rules by bringing people into that environment. And it was the same that happened the year before after the 2010 World Cup with Carlos Vela. If you remember, he was suspended. for 6 months from the national team, and Efraim Warriors as well. But I think this time around, the Federation are just like, we're not in agreement. But at the end of the day, it was their free time. And obviously, I imagine the Federation assumed that they would be spending, you know, the days with the family and kids and you know, parents and whoever. But obviously, the players seem to have had other ideas.
Tom, I'm going to move us away from the gutter and the tawdry nature of Andrew's line of questioning, which is so typically him. What is the mood in Mexico amongst the Mexican people going into this World Cup, maybe compared to previous tournaments? And what's the level of expectation like for this team?
I mean, I think the mood in Mexico isn't great. I mean, obviously, when the World Cup kicks off, I think, you know, the fans are going to get behind the team, but you know, this incident as well, it's another kind of negative, and I think fans aren't, you know, they're not happy with Juan Carlos Osorio. You know, he's not been a popular manager, he's got the results, but, you know, fans don't like the way the team plays, and I don't know, he's not really managed to get his message across. And I think 4 years ago, you had Miguel Herrera, he was so popular before that World Cup. You know, he'd come out with comments, he was, you know, we're going to beat Brazil, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And it was just a very different kind of narrative from Herrera. And Osorio's much more, he's like a professor. I mean, he's a very, very good manager, but he's like a professor, and it's a different kind of narrative. So, yeah, so I think it's, you know, not particularly positive, but I don't know, I think Mexico's got a good team, and they're in the prime. I mean, this is a squad that is absolutely in its prime with a bunch of players that played together for so long, so I think Mexico's got reason to be positive, to be honest.
Tom Marshall of ESPN FC joining us from, where are you right now, JFK?
Yeah, I'm in JFK. waiting for the flight to Copenhagen.
I'm curious, I want to go, I guess, a little deeper on the Juan Carlos Osorio thing, because, I mean, it was hard to ignore during the Mexico-Scotland match, you know, the chance of fans wanting him out. He was getting booed. I mean, when did the tide turn with him? Was the fan base ever on side with him, or was there a moment? Was it the thrashing against Chile? What was the moment that kind of fractured the relationship between him and the fan base?
Yeah, I think it was the 7-0 against Chile. It just, you know, it was a historically terrible, terrible result that, you know, Mexico fans haven't seen. And then, you know, then you pile on the media criticism of him, the criticism for former players, former managers, and, you know, that explains it. And it's like, there's not much you can do, you know, to get over it now. But, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I think, honestly, Mexico fans' expectations are borderline ridiculous at times, considering where the Mexican national team has been at historically, because Mexico's always been a decent team. But never a team that goes into a World Cup threatening to get close to winning it, or, you know, it's just never been one of those teams that's been favoured. So I think the expectations for the Mexico manager, whoever it is, and I think it is a little bit worse because Juan Carlos Osorio is Colombian, so he's, you know, as a foreigner. But whoever it is, I mean, Mexico plays in the Estadio Azteca, and it's like that Scotland game. They're not just expecting a 1-0 win; they're expecting to, not just beat the team, but they want them to kind of humiliate the other team. I mean, I think that's the context. And I don't know. I mean, I thought Mexico played quite well against Scotland, and, you know, if it could have finished, it would have been 4-5-0. So, I mean, that's what it is with Osorio. But I'll tell you what, boys. You know, for me, this is Mexico heading into this World Cup. Mexico goes out of the group stage, an absolute disaster. You know, no doubt about it. It'll be a disaster, and that's how it'll be portrayed in the media. Mexico goes out of the round of 16. It'll be kind of same again. Why can't we get past this stage? You know, very introspective kind of narrative going on. And then if you do reach the quarterfinal, Osorio's coming back a hero. We'll be celebrating him on the streets. I mean, for me, with the Mexican national team, it's almost as simple as that with this World Cup.
Yeah, sounds a little bit like the England of the scenario here. Let's talk a bit about the players, Tom. So, take for example, I was looking at the squad today. Say someone like Irving Lozano comes bounding into the tournament after a great season at PSV, and contrast that with, say, Javier Hernandez or Tecatito, who've had, let's put it, quieter seasons. Is that a concern, the form of some of these players for Osorio?
Some of them. Honestly, I'm not concerned at all about Chicharito. I think he's in a great place, and I think this is the first World Cup where he's pretty much going to start. Because 2014, 2010, he actually went in and he wasn't the starter. But But yeah, I'm not concerned about Chicharito, Tecatito. I think you'd want him to be coming off a bit of a better season. But you know, Carlos Vela's there. He's absolutely started amazingly well with LAFC. He looks like a, I don't know, just by looking at him, not just the way he's playing, but the way he's talking, it's a different Vela. I mean, he wasn't at the party. Vela wasn't at the party the other day, so he just seems to have got this like new level of maturity. And I think he can be a big player for Mexico. For me, the most important player is Hector Herrera. You know, it's a real shame that he's got this obviously personal problem now heading into the tournament. But I mean, this is the guy, he's the heartbeat of Mexico's team. Most assists, most chances created. You know, he's right there at the top. And for Mexico to have a good tournament, for me, Herrera's got to be big in games and control the midfield.
Last one for me, Tom, and it's kind of a two-part question. Pretty simple. When you look at this team, their greatest strength as well as their greatest weakness?
I think the greatest strength is the collective. I mean, I don't think this is a team with a star. I think the way they play, I think it's going to be an attractive team to watch. Obviously, they can do damage up front, but, you know, the squad, what was it, 68% possession last November playing against Belgium in Brussels. I mean, this is a team that's going to go into that game against Germany and try and dominate possession and try and get the ball. And I don't know, that's something, I mean, I might be a bit of an idealist, but there's something I like about that from a team that isn't going to go into that game as a favourite. And then I think the weakness is the other side of that. The other side of that is you're going to get teams that are going to sit back against Mexico and Mexico can be caught on the counter. I mean, we saw players forward and we saw it against Chile. We saw it against Germany in the Confederations Cup. They can get hit quite easily on the counter-attack. I'd say that's what you've got to be wary of, really.
Tom, one final one for me, because I want to squeeze this one in. You pointed out in a recent article for ESPN FC that Mexico doesn't really have an out-and-out holding midfielder in the side. Does this mean that one of the tournament's most fascinating veterans, Rafa Márquez, could see some starting time for El Tri?
I'll tell you what, the more time's going on, the more it's kind of... You'd have asked me that even 3 days ago, I would have said no. As I said, Rafa Márquez, he's just going to be coming off the bench for 20 minutes if the game situation requires it. But now it's like Diego Reyes, everything's pointing to Diego Reyes being out of the tournament. I mean, it's not been confirmed yet, but he's not training yet with the full team. So, and I think Osorio had Diego Reyes playing that holding role. And then Herrera, I mean, if you play Herrera in the holding role, then you miss his presence further forward. And then it's like between two players. It's between Edson Álvarez, who's 20 years old. You know, he's got 12 caps to his name. And you're all Rafa Márquez. And it's like they're both at opposite ends of the spectrum. And neither one is ideal right now. So I wouldn't completely rule it out at this point, to be honest.
Wow.
Wow, fascinating stuff, man. Hey, we joke, but in all seriousness, I hope you have fun. I mean, this is obviously an awesome thing, so enjoy it. And we will be following Mexico very closely throughout this. Thanks so much, Tom.
Thanks very much for the invite.
Our thanks to Tom.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Rafa Márquez, still, yeah, I mean...
I had to shoehorn in a question about him. 5 World Cups.
Not just on the team, but potentially going to play a real role for them.
Yeah.
Still.
Amazing. Because I will be honest with you, he was so infuriating in his time at Red Bull. That was the first time Red Bull was in my consciousness. I thought he was done. I really didn't think that he could prolong his career to the point where he'd be at another World Cup.
Yeah, I would tend to agree.
Amazing.
By the way, one name that we didn't mention, here, you know, you may have to bring this back. Do you think Jonathan Gonzalez is regretting his decision?
I know that's a really unfair question,
but do you think that he made this move from the U.S. eligibility to Mexican eligibility partially out of the belief that, okay, the U.S. aren't going to the World Cup, let me go to this country where I can go to the World Cup?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think he was looking
that was an honest question. I was not trying to
disparage him. He was taking a long view. He was like, oh, well, if I get good form, I'm playing with the country I want to play with. If I have good form, I'll make the World Cup. If I play for the US, I'm not going to be at the World Cup. And I honestly believe he was playing the long game. I would hope so anyway.
Yep. Hey, you know what time it is now?
Go on.
It's K-pop time.
Let's go. 좀 비워 내기 싫어 더 이상 내게 높은 기분을 주지마 한잔 술 좀 비워 내기 싫어 자꾸 건배하듯이 눈을 맞추지마 한잔 술 좀 비워 내기 싫어
Yeah, you liking it?
That's not awful.
I suppose that's a lukewarm endorsement.
No,
of that.
It's okay.
That was Loco X Suasa, Don't Give It To Me is what it was called.
There was a nice nice little hook to it. I enjoyed it. I
continue to butcher all pronunciations.
It's fine. I mean, we were worried about the fact we're not doing Help a Fan because of cultural sensitivities. Yet you've decided to go on a tour of countries butchering languages.
You know who I am?
Who are you?
And I feel bad making fun of him because he was doing the best that he could. He learned a second language. I'm Michael Bloomberg when he used to, like, after his mayoral press conferences, he would then do them in Spanish with his same New York
drawl.
Accent.
Yeah.
that's what I'm doing.
Or David Moyes when he was doing his unos, dos, tres in Spanish.
Yes.
Yeah.
South Korea.
By the way, I just mentioned it. Before we get to South Korea. We will not be doing a Help a Fan because you know what? It's a Premier League thing. I don't want to tear it to shreds or make it kind of forced.
By the way, also, I feel like I've seen a lot of other places doing it, and so I'm like, you know what, you can have the World Cup.
Yeah, we've been doing it forever. You do it. There's plenty of other outlets. We do a Premier League Help a Fan. It's wildly popular. I don't want to mess with that formula.
Yeah, let's just stick with it. Is this your way of saying that I assigned you a homework assignment and you just got no time for
it? I'll tell you what, friend, you've put a lot of content obligations on. Well, we've put a lot of content pressure.
The door's right there.
The door's right there.
you can walk out anytime.
We put a lot of pressure on ourselves, let's be honest.
We expect only the most professional behavior from the two of us. South Korea.
Yeah.
Look, for me, here he comes. Here comes old Spursy Andrew. Back on the show again. Put on your no, because it's Sun. That's what that's to me what this is about for the South Korean team. He is officially the focal point for this side to the point where South Korea's manager Shin Tae-young, he spoke with Mauricio Pochettino and just which I kind of enjoyed as like almost like a really human moment. He called Pochettino and said, "What is the best way for me to be using this guy?" Because he knows. He knows this is the star quality on this team, and they've got to find a way to utilize him properly, or this is going to be a short World Cup for them.
Very much so. And if you look at the way they qualified, I mean, they kind of limped into these finals. Finished second in Asia's Group A behind Iran, just ahead of Syria and Uzbekistan. They're not good. They just aren't. And defensively, they scored 11 and conceded 10 in qualifying. Okay. But you got to dig into the detail a bit on that. They conceded 5 goals in 2 games to Qatar. I feel like they could be picked apart by the attacking heavyweights in this group, which are Germany and Mexico.
Here were some. I mean, you mentioned their poor qualification campaign. It almost makes the United States look like a campaign of glory.
Steady.
Draw with Syria, lost to Iran, lost to China, lost to Qatar, draw with Uzbekistan.
How have they even qualified?
They won 2 games in 10 qualifiers. Qatar did. One was against South Korea. South Korea won 4 games. China, Qatar, Uzbekistan, and Syria. All of these by just 1 goal. They didn't blow anybody out. I'm not exactly reading off the titans of the game here.
No. And at some point...
This is poor.
Yeah. There are some, you know, we say we can't read a lot into qualification for a team like Portugal. Okay. You know, Portugal are expected to win their group. But we can read into qualification for some of the lesser nations. And this is not...
Look, sometimes people don't want to hear this. Luck matters. And the U.S. were on the wrong side of it this time around. Mexico were on the right side of it in the last qualification campaign. South Korea were on the right side of it this time. Because here's the thing. In Asian qualifying, you know how it breaks down into those 2 groups.
Yeah.
They finished second in Group A with 15 points. That's an automatic qualification spot. They were in the incredibly weak side of the bracket. Had they been in Group B, Australia were 3rd, had to go into the playoff. With 19 points.
Yeah.
I mean, they wouldn't have been close.
No.
And they didn't even have to go through the playoff. That was Syria that wound up having to do that with Australia.
Luck
matters sometimes.
This is not your older brother's South Korea from 2002. It really isn't. You've asked me for an X factor, which you always do. Hwang Hee-chan from Red Bull Leipzig. Young man, 20 games, 5 goals, 2 assists. It's not he's not ripping up trees, but if there's somebody else who can help with the burden of attacking, maybe he's one.
Yeah. Before I give you my X factor, just looking at, you know, we talk about what could be their undoing if this is if this tournament ends early for them. I don't know. Tell me if maybe this is could be too harsh, but on their 23-man roster, they've got 4 guys not playing in either Korea or Japan professionally. Lee Sung-woo at Verona, Ki Sung-young at Swansea, Sun with Spurs, and the guy you just mentioned, Hwang Hee-chan at Salzburg. Lee Chung-young of Crystal Palace failed to make the 23. So if we criticize American players and the U.S. men's national team for having too many guys who aren't testing themselves or aren't good enough to go play in Europe, then I think we have to look at South Korea and say a similar thing.
Yeah.
In terms of my X factor, I went with Lee Sung-woo, just 20 years old. Bit of a surprise inclusion, made his national team debut just a week ago in the 2-0 win for the friendly over Honduras. He was a part of Barcelona's youth system, but opted to leave for Verona following a very successful under-20 World Cup showing. Didn't play a ton this season, but he did finish fairly well for Verona, scored a goal in March against AC Milan. Again, just 20, not much national team experience. You never know. Those guys can be wild cards. And I don't know. I would think that it's going to have to break right for him, for South Korea to have a successful tournament.
Yeah, I don't see them going on a run.
Boy, this was a very dour approach.
I know, I've got family in South Korea.
Yeah, that's right. Your sister-in-law, right?
Yeah. I don't know what to tell her.
Is she asking?
She used to regularly text me when Son would do something in the Premier League. Because everyone loves him. He's like a god out there.
Well, he is. In Mauricio Pochettino, I think in his book, or it might have been an article, he was interviewed about Son. He said Son's entourage is massive.
It's huge.
Because I guess he's dating a famous pop star.
Oh, yeah, and he's got the name of a playboy. When I look at Son, I think of like a cheeky young fella.
Well, he's from a famous family as well.
Yeah.
So he kind of came into, he was sort of born famous, I guess. And, you know, he also seems very likable. You know, the secret handshakes. He's got a nice smile. Here he comes again, old Spursy.
Old Spursy Andy. Oh, I love that kid. Well, and he wears the lily white. What a kid.
But the point is, he's a sensation in that country.
Can I just add one interesting tidbit to this that I read somewhere? In South Korea, they have like very serious military service between the ages of, I think it's 18 and 25, and you have to do it. Or 18 and 35. And the way to get out of it, the only way to get out of it, I say get out of it, that's not the right thing to say. Exceptions are made for athletes and Olympians. And they're, you know, that's the reason that a lot of these players, top players in Europe of the past, the 2002 team, maybe didn't have to do their national service. But the suggestion in the article was that this might be reversed. Say South Korea have a poor tournament and they don't do anything. They may reverse those decisions where they turn a blind eye to top athletes and they may call these people up.
Wow, that's pressure.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember John Anarisa having an issue with Norway in his national service as well when he was at Liverpool. So,
interesting.
Yeah, imagine. Right before Champions League final for Spurs, Son's called up.
Called into duty.
Yep.
We move on now and we head to the beautiful nation of Sweden. This is one of those, like, get your lighters out and wave from side to side.
Yeah, it's got that sound, isn't it?
Very poppy sound to that. That was Norli and KKV, Mer for Varandra.
Well, it's no ABBA, Andrew.
Number one in SwedishCharts.com for those wondering the qualifications of that.
What's your favorite ABBA song? Are you an ABBA guy?
So many to choose from. Probably Dancing Queen. That's a song, right?
Dancing Queen, very good one, yeah.
That would be the one.
I think Knowing Me, Knowing You is my favorite.
Mm.
I find that anybody who has a taste in music, it doesn't matter if it's rock or hip-hop, and they know ABBA, it's just such good, catchy pop that you can't, and the songs are so well-crafted, you can't help but love them. It's a shame that ABBA would be disgusted with that effort there.
Wow, that was pretty harsh. That was JJ. with that criticism.
And they'd be disgusted with this football team.
Okay. The key players. Look, I'll start. I went with Emil Forsberg, winger for RB Leipzig, great playmaker.
Mm. Not quite the season.
No, which is why this World Cup is so important for him.
Because, I think so, too. I think
he's kind of one of the candidates to make a potential big money move. There's actually already been some kind of high-profile discussions between him and Arsenal ongoing.
Think of all the talk about Forsberg in the 16-17 season. Like, it was crazy. He was leading Europe's top leagues in assists. I remember, I think he may have even been a man of the match for me with one of his performances. He was the guy. I'm not saying he's not the guy now, but he needs a solid tournament to kind of put him back front and center for a big transfer, I feel.
Yeah. Is he your guy also for the key player here?
Yeah, because the other options didn't exactly bowl me over. Mikael Lustig, solid defender. Victor Lindelof, fine.
Yeah.
They're dull. You know, as much as I bemoaned like the whole Zlatan circus and that I didn't feel he should be called into the team because he didn't help them qualify. And I do stick to that. This is not a Sweden team that makes you... Like, there's been Swedish teams in the past who've got you excited with Henrik Larsson and the like. This isn't one of them.
Yeah, which is why... Let's not dance around it. Let's talk about the Zlatan thing, because to me, that's a potential undoing for them. I mean,
I don't think so.
Well, here's the thing. They didn't bring him. Maybe that unburdens them of whatever negative force he may be, but he's a great player. I mean, let's not kid ourselves about that. He is.
Yeah, but he comes in. We talked about the social aspect of Leroy Sané. What's the social aspect of bringing in a guy who's a big time Charlie who didn't do anything to help you qualify?
You're
that could
right.
ruin the team ethic.
It could. It potentially could. But here's the thing. I mean, look. I don't mean to downplay that, but it's all fine and good when you're coming off this triumph over Italy and guys, you know, are feeling good about themselves, and it becomes very easy in the wake of that to say, Zlatan, who needs him? You know, he was done with us. We move on. But now, okay, we're in a new tournament now. The reset button is hit. So once that ball gets kicked and they're in a difficult group where I don't think there are going to be all that many people's favorites necessarily to get out of this group. You know, so when their back is against the wall, you know, who's the guy now? Like, you're just saying that this is not a very good team. So you can't tell me that even if he's somewhat, if he's a disruptive force chemistry-wise, that's potentially more important than having a great player on a team that is not full of, like, Germany can do that because they're a roster of fantastic players. Sweden, chemistry is that important for this team that they're willing to cast aside a transcendent player in the World Cup. All right, we'll see how it goes. But I just think it's easy for everyone to be rah-rah, forget him after qualifying. But this is different.
I think if he was really himself deadly serious about being in the Swedish team, he would have positioned himself somewhere else other than Carson, California, or wherever he is. Honestly, that's another way to look at it. Like, why, he couldn't have got a loan move to the end of the season in Europe and kept himself in
the fold. Probably could have, but it may not be what he wanted.
Yeah. I mean, Marcus Berg, 8 goals in qualifying for them, and he's playing in the Gulf League for Al-Ahly, you know?
Mm.
So, I mean, their undoing for me is not going to be Zlatan Ibrahimovic necessarily. It's going to be that the goals dry up and they're not creative enough. Sebastian Larsson in the middle of the park.
Yeah, all right.
I don't know. They're aging in some key positions as well.
Yeah, I mean, my X factor is kind of what I'm talking about, this country over club mentality, because they're going to need that. Guys who maybe overperform for their national team, who underperform for their club teams. For Sweden to make a run, I think that's going to have to happen, maybe with the exception of Forsberg, who we talked about, although, like you said, he wasn't exactly a sensation this year.
No, he had a definite second-season syndrome.
Yeah, but there's not a ton of guys coming out of the season. This is from ESPN FC. Victor Lindelof, the most promising center back, had a nightmare debut season at Manchester United. John Guidetti didn't find his feet at Alaves. Ola Toivonen is hardly playing for Toulouse. Marcus Berg chose to move to Al An in Abu Dhabi. And first-choice goalkeeper Robin Olsen suffered a very untimely injury. I mean, that's a lot of key players' names that were mentioned there that are not coming into this World Cup in good form. So something is going to have to change. And the only thing I can think of is country over club. So that's maybe a weak X factor, but that's where I'm at right now.
They play a nice 4-4-2, Andrew. It'll be comfortable and Remind us of simpler times.
There you go. Is that it for you in Sweden?
Yeah.
How about we take out the old wheel here for JJ's Blast from the Past? I got the four teams from this group mapped out on the wheel. Let's give it an old spin. And where does she land?
South Korea. That's nice.
Oh, I know where you're going here, and I like it.
We've got the Golden Goal versus Italy in the round of 16 in Japan and South Korea in 2002.
He couldn't climb, but Lee Chun-soo has recovered the ball. Lee Young-pyo playing it in.
Goal! Golden goal! Has ever a goal been more golden? And Jung-hwan, South Korea, quarterfinals!
I'll tell you right now, if I were living in South Korea at that time and I was a South Korean fan, that call right there, I would get shirts made, has ever a goal been more golden? With just like a picture of An heading it in. That's beautiful.
It wasn't exactly golden for An Jung-hwan, though.
Because he lost his job.
He was on loan at Perugia, and they immediately terminated his contract.
That's not petty.
Which is pretty amazing. Think about that tot he was sent off in that game. There's a whole host of suspect refereeing decisions.
Both in that game in South Korea's favor and then against Spain.
And then against Spain.
Yeah.
But what a run.
It was really a lot of fun. Semifinals.
Remember that crowd? It was just a sea of red.
Incredible noise generated by the South Korean.
Great hosts. They were superb hosts.
Yes. Any mailbag for this?
Yeah, we've got one from Germany, I believe. Darnell Lee. What up, fellas? After Germany repeat as World Cup champions. Oh, confident. Does this put Yogi Löw at or near the top of the list for greatest manager of all time?
Has to.
In my opinion, a repeat of 2014, in addition to all of his semi-final appearances, puts him at the top. Mind you, Germany has all of this continued success without a world-renowned star like a Messi, Ronaldo, or Neymar. And finally, he says...
Well, that's a world-renowned star is a relative term.
I know what he's saying, though. He's kind of alluding to what we were talking about. Yeah. Darnell
I mean, Neuer's, when he's healthy, the best keeper in the world. Kroos is one of the best midfielders in the world. They got some pretty good players.
Also, I believe all the criticism Löw has gotten from the Premier League, only watching fans and certain UK media members over the exclusion of Leroy Sané is unfair. Your thoughts? Look, Darnell... Thanks for the email. Very good email. Yeah. They're entitled to question it. It doesn't matter who you are these days. People have to have their media hot take on things. A reaction is required. Whether no one says I'm not sure anymore, I'll have to think about it.
By the way, is oftentimes the correct answer.
It is the correct answer. Or I really don't know. Let's see how the tournament plays out. But no, I wasn't surprised by the UK media reaction because Sané's numbers, as we pointed out in the podcast, far outdo anybody else. So that's that.
Good stuff. My quick prediction for this group is actually the order in which we did it. Germany, Mexico, South Korea, and Sweden.
Yeah, I see it that way as well. I think the Germans are going to be top, and I believe Mexico will follow, and then whatever.
So there you go. Oh, that's Group F. Just two more groups to go. Thank you, everybody, who's been with us through all these group previews.
Oh, and the kind words as well.
I know.
Some people have really enjoyed them.
It's been great.
Yeah.
This tournament's going to be fun. Obviously, so keep your eyes open next week. It's like the stuff that we're putting out there now is so ramping up. We're in the middle of this USA Turn the Page breakdown that we've been doing.
Special.
Yeah, two more groups to go. We'll have a general World Cup podcast for you next week and a special guest next week as well.
Yeah.
We talked about a Bruce Arena on the podcast. So much to still look forward to. And then the tournament starts on Thursday. This is unbelievable.
We're very good with our content.
We really are. Hey, and you were very good on this podcast. I enjoyed it very much. To you, I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.